Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's Political Commentary.
With Professor Jennifer Curtin this morning. Kia ora, Jennifer. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
How are you getting on in these lockdown times? Bit of a weird one to be back here again, but at least we know what we're doing, I guess.
Yeah. I think the challenge for this time round has been much more around how many people just ended up in self-isolation because of connections with locations of interest. And so, you know, it got up to, 25,000.
Yeah, it's a lot.
So the requests when you're in self-isolation to text your neighbour and get them to deliver food, and then they come back to you and say, I'm in self-isolation too.
Oh, no. Is this something you've been experiencing?
Yeah. I had a son who was at a work site that ended up being a location of interest. So we were in self-isolation for 10 days while we waited for test results. And I think at home we've been calling it level 5. So I think self-isolation is a version of, it's more than 4.5. It's definitely level 5.
Yeah, it is. That seems to be the general response I've had from friends who've also been going through it. And it kind of segues into the first thing I wanted to have a chat to you about, which is how university students are getting on at the moment. Because obviously you teach at the University of Auckland. We've been thinking a lot about how students must be getting on at this time, because it would be extremely difficult to be doing all of this in a hall of residence, for example, and also trying to juggle your studies. How have your students been coping with this time?
Yeah, I think it's a lot more complex and a lot closer to everyone this time. So we've got those issues of juggling, the sort of having to work out of a bedroom and not being able to go anywhere if you're in a hall or in an apartment type block, and the unknowns about, the 5K rule or what's open and what's closed. So we had that last time, but this time, because of the numbers of locations of interest and not, needing to get tested more and then waiting for those tests and then hoping you're eligible for a vaccine and that sort of thing, it's just increased that underlying anxiety level, I think. So, it ups the amount of pastoral care that we're doing, but we're doing it through Zoom, which is also a very, we're still adapting to ways of doing manaakitanga and whakawhanangatanga through Zoom, as tauiwi. It is a very palpable experience. We've had students whose internet has dropped out. There's just so much this time, I think, because it feels that much closer. The risks are that much closer to us than what perhaps in March last year we were dealing with. So it was more unknown last time, but this time it's just that the possibilities of being exposed to the virus are just a lot more closer this time. So I think we're in mid-semester break right now, so that's giving us an ability to delay the when assignments are due, being able to add extra contact hours. And, some of our early career researchers and teachers are just fantastic about giving us links to really cool stuff that we can share with our students to help them through that period of isolation.
It's been really awesome to see as well the students themselves stepping up to support their, peers when they can. I've seen Ngā Tauira Māori at the University of Auckland has been managing to get some support packages and care packages off to students who are in self-isolation. And the Student Volunteer Army has been doing a lot of that as well, and doing shopping on behalf of people who can't go out, which is really nice to see. This is something that comes up quite often outside of the pandemic, is about how we see perhaps at these big campus universities like the University of Auckland in recent years, and with perhaps the increasing neoliberalisation of universities, a lack of cohesion and student campus culture can be sometimes a criticism levelled at universities today. Do you think that maybe a positive to come out of all of this is we might see some more community-focused action from our students and from the university to help facilitate that? Is that something you'd like to see or you think is a possibility? Or do you think that the time we're going through is ultimately going to increase the isolation students are going through?
Well, there's certainly a risk of increased isolation, and I think the propensity for that was already growing. Atomization is a byproduct of neoliberalism, and we have increasingly large numbers of on-site student residences now. But those residences have really good communal areas as well. So when this isn't on, I agree that the university could be looking at ways of supporting more collective engagement opportunities to do support work. But often I would say that we are, the students themselves have the best ideas about how this can be done, and that's what grassroots organic ways of working we need to find ways of helping students feed that through to the hierarchy so that we can learn about what we need to provide from those who have those brilliant ideas and are able to connect with each other, because it does feel sometimes that we're a little bit old, and our ways of working from a couple of generations ago might not fit the current environment. So certainly opening up those communication channels and directing some resource to that would be invaluable.
Well, let's talk a little bit about National and the ACT Party in particular, and their sort of insistence on holding Parliament in person at level four, which has been a strange kind of thing happening amidst all of the immediate crisis stuff of this Delta outbreak. What's your take on this? Why is the National Party, particularly Judith Collins and also David Seymour from ACT, making such a big stand about having this in-person Parliament?
Yeah, so this is a really kind of complex one, actually, because we're getting really mixed messages about the reasons why we've ended up with this. But certainly there was sort of an outcry at the suspension of Parliament last week from the opposition parties, and then the business committee got to work to try and work out a way to run this virtual Parliament. And Chris Bishop was one of the national reps on that and was working quite closely with the Speaker and the government to work out a way of doing a virtual Parliament. And with that virtual Parliament, we actually had enhanced Select Committee work. But then on Friday there was sort of this, no, sorry, we don't want a virtual Parliament, we want the Epidemic Select Committee. And what we need to remember about the Epidemic Select Committee, which was run by Simon Bridges, is it was a non-government dominated committee, and Simon Bridges got to have chair it and have daily, it was televised.
Yeah.
So there is some politics about this. It's not just about the Collins being in the Parliament and having those other MPs, a very small number, in the Parliament meeting in person. It's about the absence or presence of an Epidemic Select Committee or Response Committee to do that really hard accountability work. And that was a great model for last year, but that was when the opposition had a much larger number of MPs and was able to demand that of the government, that be the solution. This time around, all the select committees are government-dominated, and so they did boost the way in which they could interrogate this past week those hard questions, although, the government party has to be responsible in that and allow its MPs not to just take a party line on everything and be soft. So in a sense, there's been this grandstanding around the problems with being virtual that we saw in the media yesterday, and Judith Collins had quite a whirlwind day in the media yesterday with some very difficult live interviews. So that's one part of it, and that's a problem not being able to shift to a virtual Parliament. But the other part of it is that our select committee system probably needs some further consideration, because the point of it is not just to consider legislation, before it becomes law, but it's also should be about holding ministers and bureaucrats to an account and in a way that supplements question time.
I'm interested in your thoughts because Te Pāti Māori and also the Green Party have refused to go into the in-person parliament at level four. Do you think we're seeing a lot of moral conversations going on around whether it is justifiable to be meeting when feasibly it could be done on Zoom or online in some capacity? Do you think that we should be having, or our politicians should be having, more focus around how to, as you say, get these epidemiological subcommittees and the select committees online and into these spaces so that we can have some rigorous form of holding the government to account in that space? Or do you think that it is necessary that they are in person? What is your sort of take on that particular side of it?
Yeah, I think that we look like we're laggards in this. So what we know when we look overseas is that countries that are some countries have been running virtual options since before the pandemic for a range of other reasons to ensure inclusion. Right, this is what it's about. Not so Brazil, for example, massive country, really difficult for some MPs to travel in and then travel out. And if we were thinking about some other aspects of moral behaviour or positions, we might think about the climate and not needing to get on a plane every time there's a vote in the House or a debate in the House. So we know that there are other models out there that predated the pandemic, and then we know that the UK moved to a virtual parliament as soon as the pandemic hit. So there are examples of this working elsewhere, and it has the possibility of being more inclusive, not just during the time of a pandemic, while also allowing for rigorous debate. And I think one of the challenges for us is that it's because, in part, that we're a Westminster system and we work on this really, the significance that's given to question time. And we don't think about the committees in the same way as some other kinds of parliamentary systems, where that's the place where the hardcore questioning happens. And even the Senate committees in Australia are much more about really holding bureaucrats and politicians to account. And it is more inclusive. So this kind of work around designing a virtual option should have been happening already in the 18 months since the pandemic broke out, but it's certainly something that the House should be thinking about more in terms of going forward, and that it shouldn't just be always in person.
Well, I did want to have a quick chat about how the vaccine rollout is going, but we might actually just be a little bit short on time, so we might have to save that one up for another day. But I've so enjoyed chatting to you this morning, especially getting your thoughts around how students are getting on at the moment, and also how this virtual parliament system could be a thing that we hopefully see maybe in the future. But thanks very much for your time this morning, Professor Jennifer Curtin. It's been great to speak to you. I hope isolation's not too rough on you guys, and we'll see you soon.
Yeah. You too. Take care.
Take care. Ka kite.
You just heard a bit of political commentary
with Perf.